You're listening to the Best of the Morning Show podcast. Today's best segments from all 3 hours rolled into one.
Championship Wednesday. It got bigger last night as Florida embarrasses Alabama, which opens up an outright SEC championship with a win tonight. Had Alabama won, Tennessee could have still locked up the one seed, but Alabama could have gotten their grubby little paws on a split on Saturday if things went their way. But instead, now the coast is completely clear. Tennessee wins tonight. They win the SEC by at least one game. I don't know if we talked about it on the show or not. And we did our little, you know, spread projection and all those things. But Tennessee opened up as 5.5-point favorites for their trip to Columbia. Too high, too low, just right. Minus 245 on the old money line. So Tennessee, a pretty solid road favorite tonight.
I think it's just right, honestly. I know we've talked about it, and I continue to vacillate between being concerned to, no, man, we've got this, and I'm on that mode right now. I think they see it now with Alabama having lost. I just think they're very locked in to me. I really believe they're going to come out and take care of business tonight.
Yeah, I feel like this is just like you said, John, I think they got way too much kind of looking forward to this. And then, you know, coming off of a loss to South Carolina as well, I think that'll absolutely help, knowing that they want to kind of get that revenge game back and go kind of get a lick of – kind of get their licks back, I guess, you know, on the road as well, and kind of give them a taste of their own medicine. So I think we'll comfortably beat them more than 5.5.
Well, thanks to Florida, that locks up a – outright solo SEC championship. If Tennessee wins tonight at South Carolina, they will have accomplished something they have not done since 2008. We are in the midst. We are nearing the climax of the greatest Tennessee basketball season of all time. That's the way it feels. Like you're doing things that you haven't done in a while. You're doing things maybe that you've never done before. When you add in the one seed and hopefully an Elite Eight and Final Four run, and I'm not stopping there. I think this team can win it all. First big step tonight, though, the first hardware you can win is in Columbia, South Carolina.
A couple of thoughts on this from last night's game between Florida and Alabama. The one thing I couldn't help but think about, and it speaks to what we're just talking about with Tennessee, is – man, Florida's good, and I feel like everybody talks about, you know, with Tennessee from the fan base, you know, put your cup on, all this other stuff. Tennessee got a break, if you think about it, because, again, when Florida came into town back in January, it was not this team. You know, the one time Tennessee played them, I mean, doesn't mean we're not better than Florida, but those are the kind of things that haven't happened in the past to Tennessee. You would usually maybe get a team like them on the heater that they're on now. It did happen a little bit with South Carolina, I guess you could say, although I think Tennessee lost that game more than South Carolina won it, if you know what I mean. I felt like they had all sorts of opportunities. But I feel like there's all these little intangible things that are happening, and I don't think I'm just searching for something. I really think that some of this is things are breaking the right way for this team, and they're playing well too. And I think we've been saying it all along, man, this team's different for sure. And then for Alabama – we were communicating on the text thread last night. Sure felt to me like, as a Tennessee fan, I'd like to say maybe Tennessee should take a little credit for the demise of Alabama, too. I just feel like they did not look like the same team out there. We know they don't play as well on the road, but they looked lifeless at times last night, which is rare for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tennessee – I don't want to say eliminating them from the SEC championship race because they still were technically alive, but ripped destiny out of their control on Saturday night and they did look like a team. I think if they had a chance to, you know, win out, win the SEC without worrying about what Tennessee did, I think you get a better effort last night. But I still don't think they would have won at Florida. Like, I still think that we have a lot of games to point to when it comes to sample size that Alabama just can't stop teams with a pulse. Their defense is that bad. So would they have been had a little bit more pep in their step, Bob? Yeah. Would the game have gone any different? I can't say it would have. I think they would have tried harder. Like, maybe they don't fall down 23, but they still lose that game by 10 points, in my opinion. Or at least lose the game.
Yeah.
Because Florida's better. And Florida's good at home. And Alabama just can't play good teams. Their defense against good offenses cannot stop them. They end up outside the top 100, around the 140 range in terms of defensive efficiency. So that's just who they are. Which, it was tough to see basketball genius Nate Oates get annihilated in an elimination game as his team just clanked threes. Hey, you're getting them up, though. Good job. Shot 24% from them. Good job.
The new sneaky basketball genius might be Todd Golden.
Perhaps. You know, I can't go that far, though, Bob, because I did just see South Carolina.
Well, that's true.
Confuse your basketball genius with a 1-3-1 zone. It did feel like that a basketball genius would not let that happen to him over a 7-minute period. But I will say he does seem like a good coach, and it does seem like Florida is going to be back to being a threat in the years coming with him. He is better than Mike White. That is for sure. Still don't know how he recruits. I haven't kept up. I don't know how he recruits. You know, that was a part of Mike White's problem, was that he couldn't necessarily take the talent he was recruiting and get better. So it was the opposite, I guess. Like, Mike White could get the talent, then just couldn't do anything with him. I feel like Todd Golden can coach talent. I just don't know if he can get it. But you're 100% right about the schedule. You know, that's, I think, as a university as a whole, when you look at your two biggest programs, your basketball team and your football team, I think you've been on the right side of good scheduling the last couple years, which is rare and unique, or at least feels like, for Tennessee. You know, during the 2010s, I felt like the football team was always on the wrong side of the schedule. Basketball team on the wrong side of the schedule a couple times during the Grant and Admiral days, it felt like. You know, only one trip to LSU in a year where LSU wins the SEC. No rematch. 18, you could argue the opposite and say that you didn't have to go to Auburn, which this year you didn't have to go to Florida or to Auburn, two of the top five or six teams. You got fortunate there. You got both of them at home. You beat both of them. You got Florida early and beat them by 20. But something that's important is being good enough to take advantage of those things. The football team didn't take advantage of the schedule this year, Bob. They took a schedule that was set up to maybe go 10-2, and they went 8-4. The basketball team was set up for a schedule to go 15-3, 14-4, and win the SEC. And right now they're exactly on that pace. And that's even with having a historically tough end of the season. They kept saying on the broadcast last night, this the first time ever a team has had to have four straight ranked opponents to end the season. I don't know if that's just in the SEC or in college basketball history. They didn't really, you know, clarify, but the early part of the schedule was really, really nice and gave you a cushion, and now you're taking advantage of it just because you're a really good basketball team. The schedule's not easy here. Fraudulent team would not go 4-0 or 3-1 during this last four-game stretch in Tennessee on pace to do that.
Very true. I still wonder, we talked a little about this yesterday. I'm still trying to track this, that we don't want this to happen, but say Tennessee wins tonight, they clinch. Say Tennessee loses Saturday to Kentucky. Kentucky moves into, and Kentucky takes care of business against Vandy tonight. I still think there's a way where Alabama doesn't make the double bye, because Kentucky's got that tiebreaker against them too. again, don't want that to happen, although that would be an okay consolation if Alabama has to play one extra game, because I just don't see them going very deep the way they're playing right now.
Not to extend our opening Wednesday argument, Bob, but I completely disagree that that's a nice consolation. I don't care about Alabama. I mean, like, is it funny? Yes, but, like, I'm not going to be sitting there after Tennessee loses to Kentucky and be like, well, at least Alabama has to play on Thursday in the SEC tournament.
Nor so
I don't view that as a consolation at all, but it will be something we can laugh at, I guess, and maybe more so just exposing that Alabama program and Nate Oates a little bit.
Yes.
A silver lining, if you will. Is a silver lining and consolation interchangeable? Maybe they are.
Semantics.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, I don't know, because I told Bob, I was like, there's no consolation. Then I said there's a silver lining. So I was like, yeah, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe those are just interchangeable. And laughing at Alabama would be at least a small, teeny tiny but consolation, like you said.
We're going to beat Kentucky. We want that one seed in the big dance, so it's gonna not going to worry about it.
That's going to be, you know, if Tennessee takes care of business tonight, and I don't want to do the same thing. We make the same mistake we made, you know, a month ago where we just completely overlooked the South Carolina game, because that's kind of what I did, at least. You know, I didn't think that you were going to lose to South Carolina. And then you also had a – correct me if I'm wrong, that's the game you also had right before Kentucky, correct? So
that's exactly right.
It's kind of weird. The roles are completely reversed, and I don't want to look towards Kentucky and ignore South Carolina. But – if you're 3-0 during these first three games and you set up a good senior day and you have a one seed in within grasp, I imagine you'll get a pretty rockin' TBA at FCC.
Yeah.
It's tough to see this Kentucky team coming in and stopping Tennessee's offense. I'd be pretty disappointed if it was a 3-1 finish in that respect. That'll be a fun game, though. That would be a fun game. It's kind of crazy that this team lost a couple of the games that they did lose and that they're still in position to win the SEC by two games.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, they're in position to do that, right? Like, if they win tonight, they'll have a two-game lead on everybody. And then that's with a loss to, you know, at Mississippi State early in the season. That's with a home loss to South Carolina. That's with getting blown out by A&M. Three of the teams that we don't consider the best. And, you know, that goes back to your scheduling advantage of not having to play Auburn on the road and Florida on the road. I get that. But, like, for those to be your three losses and for you to win the conference by two games, that would be kind of crazy.
Felt like we were nervous about that number four, like four conference losses, that number that Will was kind of throwing out there at the start of the year after that Mississippi State game. We were like, man, we're not going to be able to get to that number, and then we just run the table.
I didn't think we would. Like. I thought of that, too, and I think we still may not, but I'm a little surprised we're right in position to do it.
You just kind of looked, and you were trying to take it like you could basically afford one loss every five games.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way you were looking at it. And then you start adding those up. You're like, uh-oh. Well, we got our third loss here, and now we can only afford one, and then Tennessee rolls off, what, six straight now?
Mm-hmm.
They answered the bell. Especially, like, yeah, I mean, tell yourself you win six straight and get it going so well after A&M embarrassed you. Because A&M did embarrass you.
And just with what the last, like, five-game stretch of the season was going to be, you're like, man, I figured one of those losses is going to come in that stretch. You
right.
know?
And, again, Tennessee hasn't tiptoed all the way through this landmine, you know, this minefield just yet. You still got to win tonight at South Carolina. A team that punked you. Whether or not you should have won that game, that's fine. But, like, South Carolina, that game, they felt more physical, and they felt like they dictated the tempo. At the very least, they punked you out a little bit. You didn't answer the bell of physicality. You didn't answer the bell of just of coming to the moment and finding a way to win. I don't think that's going to be the case tonight. 865-546-8200. If you want to weigh in, let's go to the phone lines. Let's grab Roberto. Roberto, good morning.
Hey, guys. Again, I say you have become part of my morning routine. Drive the kids to school on the way home. Call John and Bob and Sam because you guys are the best thing going right now.
Thanks, Roberto.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Before all the stuff with Brendan Miller, because Nate Oates is so annoying to me now, He yeah. wasn't that way before, but I can't even remember those times. I can't disassociate that and think of him as a positive basketball savant.
I remember when he was at Buffalo, and you know, everybody was talking about when Danny White had hired him up there, and I was watching some stuff, and I was like, man, he really knows what he's doing. And then all of a sudden, you know, you aid and abet a murderer on your team, and having an aider and abettor that you allow to play on your team, that kind of does it for me, usually. I'm not accessories to murder, I'm not a big fan of. Lastly, guys, speaking of accessories to murder, how about Tennessee just blowing Kansas State off the field last night after they got chirpy, too?
I know. Dean Curley must have heard your call, you know, trying to give his spot away next year, trying to find the shortstop of the future. He came out and had, nine RBIs?
He did. Three home runs, almost for the homer cycle. He was 2 feet short of the homer cycle, which has happened – never happened in the majors and happened 2 times in the minors in the history of baseball. Yeah, good for him, man. I'm so happy for him. I think we found our third baseman to replace Billy Amick for next year. I think he's going to end up at third base. He's got a more natural body lean and fielding position for that base. So I'm very happy for him, and I'm glad that he made me look like an idiot. I'm for that, by the way, especially if it means Tennessee wins. So I'll leave you with, John, maybe Bowling Green doesn't suck, or do they still suck because we beat them? I mean, like, we beat Kansas State much worse than we beat them.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me Bowling Green beat somebody good last night. We'll
see. No, Bowling Green actually has wins against Memphis and Middle Tennessee State, traditional baseball, good baseball
school. We'll keep up with their record throughout the year, Roberto. Appreciate the phone call.
Let's do it.
I'm staying on record of two things. Bowling Green baseball sucks, and I disagree. I think assassinations are funny.
Oh, man.
You know, maybe not at the time, but history shows them to be pretty funny.
Oh, God. Guys, I love you. I hope you have a great day. I mean,
that jumps off the balcony. That's pretty cool.
Hey, Roberto, when you hang up, listen on. I have one more point to make, and it's tied to Nate Oates. And I don't know if any of you have heard this, too, but, you know, Nate Oates' roots before he got the Buffalo assistant job and then succeeded Bobby Hurley was he was a high school coach in Michigan, right? He's got Michigan ties. There's a lot of chatter that he would pine for a job like the Michigan job, which is going to come open, right? I mean, Juwan Howard's done. And it just does make me wonder, given what he's watching happen with the Alabama team, and maybe, just maybe, some teams have figured out that beautiful mind and how to beat him in the SEC. So I just wonder if this might be a – I don't want to call it a cut and run. He still has some good capital as a coaching prospect, but I just wonder if he would go pursue that type of job. He was the one that put his name – he volunteered his name in the hat, right, for the North Carolina job. Have you heard that story back when they were hiring Hubert Davis? He went to them. They didn't go to him.
He, like, went personally or just had an agent
reach out? Well, probably had an agent reach out, but his team reached out.
Yeah.
So
he wanted that North Carolina job. Well – I was going to say, like, when you look at Michigan and, hell, you look at Louisville and possibly Indiana, I mean, those are three, you know, pretty big schools, right? Like, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio State, those are three pretty big jobs in Big Ten country. So, him wanting North Carolina kind of gives you an idea that he wants a bigger job. Now, North Carolina, you could say, is the biggest job in college basketball, if not, you know, top three or four without a doubt. But you could also make the case that Louisville is, too, and that Indiana is, too. And Michigan, top 10, top 12, somewhere around there, maybe. Like, so, I mean, if you're Nate Oates and if you're Bruce Pearl, one of those jobs is going to be really appealing.
I would think so.
There's a lot of buzz now for Louisville, for Indiana. That's the latest rumor. Indiana being in the Bruce Pearl, wanting to make him one of the highest paid coaches in the country.
They've got to do something this time around and get it right, or they'll be irrelevant. Maybe perpetually at that point.
Yeah.
They're on the edge.
All right, let's go to break, Sam. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Will Warren, Stats by Will, Show Me My Opponent is live, the championship edition, as Tennessee heads to Columbia to try to win an outright SEC championship for the first time since 2008. Will, top of the morning to you. Thank you for making time for us.
Anytime. Happy to be here. Happy to be here on a potential championship Wednesday.
Before we look forward, let's look back. What was the biggest thing that stood out to you during the Alabama win?
Well, Tennessee, both games this year kind of took a different approach to shutting down Alabama. First time out, you'll remember, they were mostly okay with Sears and crew heading downhill and just went one-on-one. They didn't devote any resources. They prevented those kickout threes, and it really threw Alabama off. So you figure, you know, they come back, they adjust, they look at that in the scouting report. And this time Tennessee, you know, overhelps a little bit, but they're so chaotic and so good at recovering on the perimeter. Alabama still didn't get many true catch-and-shoot threes off. They had to dribble into them. They had to take them a little off balance. But the biggest key this time, Alabama, per Synergy Sports, averages 16 possessions in transition per game. I'd obviously say that's an underestimate, but that's what they say. This game against Tennessee, they got five the entire game. Tennessee got back after missed shots. You just noticed throughout the game, very, very few Alabama runouts. Forced them into longer possessions. And again, I mean, you know, Josiah Jordan James said it after the game, the Rick Barnes masterclass, he's got Nate Oates' number.
Yeah, another stat that stood out to me, I heard it on the Alabama-Florida broadcast last night. Jimmy Dykes said that out of 40 loose balls, Tennessee got 24 of them against Alabama. So 24-16 in the loose ball category. So Tennessee, you know, obviously, you could say wanted it more, out-hustled, grittier, tougher, all those things when it came to the Tennessee-Alabama game. I don't know if that's going to be the case against South Carolina, because it does feel like, at least from a effort standpoint and a toughness standpoint, South Carolina is kind of the antithesis of Alabama. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, they go 100% every night. They're not the most talented team, not the best team, but they I don't know of the best comparison. They definitely remind a lot of people of the Providence team from a couple of years ago with poor metrics, but, you know, couldn't be beaten in a close game. This South Carolina team, they win a lot of those loose balls, but they're very sound defensively. They stay in front of you the whole time. They don't give up many threes. They force a very high amount of mid-range twos. It's a hard defense to crack, as Tennessee learned the first time around, but You figure with a second chance to crack it, you'd have a better shot.
Hey, Will, good morning. John just touched on it a little bit too, calling South Carolina the antithesis of Alabama. I mean, I'm trying to imagine or equate South Carolina to any other team in the SEC. I don't know if there's anyone quite like them, and I don't necessarily mean that complimentary. It's just they're a hard watch, but like you've said in your piece, they win close games. They definitely reflect the mindset of their coach. Coming from Big Ten country, they remind me a lot of some of those Wisconsin teams, and that's not coincidental, I'm sure, given Paris's background as a Bo Ryan assistant. But I mean, is there, if Tennessee was looking at it, or if you're looking at it from an analytical standpoint, is there anyone else or any other team in the SEC that is close to what they do that I'm not thinking of?
No, not really. They're kind of their own unique beast. And, I mean, there's other defense first, you know, slow it down teams in the league. You think of Mississippi State a little bit, and you know, to a very, very loose extent, you would think of like A&M or somebody. But South Carolina is probably the best at their particular style. I went into it on the newsletter yesterday a little bit, but my theory for their season this year is, you know, they don't match up well in the metrics. They have a pretty low scoring margin on the whole this year against what honestly is a pretty weak schedule. They played, I think it's the 320th ranked non-conference schedule. So, and obviously they probably did that thinking they weren't going to have the season they ended up having. But they play low and slow, and what that's going to do is, you know, against, you know, lesser, middling opponents, you're probably going to be in games longer than you should be. You don't have the possessions to maximize the margin. Against, you know, better opponents, though, you keep the game so slow that you're probably going to stay in it most of the time. They did that to Tennessee. They've done that against several good teams this year. And so, you know, credit to them. They found something that works for them. And it is a relatively unique thing to deal with in this conference.
The one thing that I was thinking about, too, I looked back to the last matchup with South Carolina. And, of course, Connect had 31 points, but they were, I don't know. It just felt it was not a pretty 31 by any stretch. So obviously they, just like many teams, they've maybe had some trouble D-ing him up. And so there's that. But then I would flip it. And I've been talking about this guy, and it gave me a little bit of validation to say that you you recognized it too, as Colin Murray-Boyles is, I think, a potential problem. And so when we talk about their ability to match up with Connect, I'm curious who you think could be our best bet to match up with him, because he is definitely trending up at this point. He's playing really well.
Yeah, I would honestly, I think you got a couple of options here. Some would say Josiah Jordan-James and let, you know, Adu handle PJ Mack. I would almost go the opposite here and have Adu or Awaka on Murray-Boyles. Boyles is not a shooting threat. He's taken 5 threes all year. He's missed all 5. He's not really a mid-range threat either. If he takes a jump shot, you're going to be okay allowing that. It's not one you're going to sweat over. And as a guy who's mostly just a presence at the rim, I think you got to put your best rim protector on him. Deal with the consequences of elsewhere if he draws you out of the paint a little bit. But, I mean, I just like that a bit more than Tennessee's strategy in the first game, which seemed to be, you know, switching everything. And you saw so much in that game, you know, B.J. Mack ending up on Jemai Meshach, or B.J. Mack ending up on Josiah Jordan-James, or even a couple that were really bad where it was Mack on Ziegler. So you don't want that to happen again, because not only is that going to result in Mack backing down a smaller defender, when you devote a second resource to that, and this is where Tennessee really got exploited the first game, that's going to result in a kick-out three. And it seems like Mack was terrific at finding those guys open in the corner in that game.
Will Warren, Stats by Will. You can go subscribe to his Substack, the best college basketball writer locally, one of the best in the entire country. Only $18 for the entire year if you sign up between now and the end of March. Statsbywill.substack.com. You could spend $18 in way, way dumber places. This $18 will actually make you smarter and maybe make you a little money this March when it comes to being informed or filling out your brackets or making some bets. Will, quite simply, yes or no, does Tennessee win tonight and get their SEC championship?
Yes.
You can elaborate on this one if you want, but roll the dice or lock it in. I guarantee you Tennessee makes their first ever Final Four, but they lose in the Final Four, in the first game, in the Final Four, in the semifinals. Or would you roll the dice thinking Tennessee can maybe do better?
I have thought about this ever since. I don't know if it was you or who asked this originally. Because initially my thought was, yeah, you lock in the Final Four. Whatever happens to whoever you lose in the semifinal, it happens. It is what it is. But Final Four is historic. And then I kept thinking, you know, it's not like all one seeds make the Final Four. If you lose in that semifinal, you know, historically speaking, odds are you're losing to like a 2 or a 3 or something like that. And I feel like that would be a huge, huge bummer. If you made it that far, let's say we're going to assume Tennessee stays a one seed, by the way. If you made it that far, Tennessee's a one seed, and they lose to, like, I don't know, 3-seed Baylor in the Final Four, that would really suck. I think you got to roll the dice.
Of the potential 3 or 4 seeds that Tennessee could play in the Sweet 16, who are a couple that Tennessee fans should be afraid of? Who are the worst matchups for this team?
Do not want to play Creighton. And it's mostly just they're so high variance. I mean, they take half their shots from 3. Tennessee's shown they're pretty happy to let teams, you know, let it fly from 3 just because it, you know, they're not going to beat you inside. But they've got that, and then you've got Kalkbrenner on Creighton, who's a pretty good shooter for a 7-footer, and is also a 7-footer, which Tennessee's not had the wildest amount of success with. But really, so out of the current 3s and 4s projected there, it would really just be them and, like, maybe Illinois. And Illinois' defense is so bad that I don't think you'd sweat much over it.
Yeah, as a show, I don't want us to have to play Creighton, because if Creighton was able to beat Tennessee, they might put a hit out on Bob, because him and McDermott look pretty similar. Somebody might confuse Bob for Coach McDermott and put a hit out on my boy. On the flip side, Will, who are some three or four seeds that would have you salivating, thinking this is a great matchup for Tennessee?
I would love to have Kansas again, but mostly because I don't think Kansas is going far in this tournament at all. Their vibes during these games are horrendous. I mean, Hunter Dickinson does not seem to be terribly happy there. They have like five guys they can play, and their bench is awful. That seems like a team that's losing in the round of 32 anyway. I would also, it's dangerous to say this, I think I'd be good with getting San Diego State. I know they went to the national title game last year, but Tennessee would have a severe athleticism advantage in that game.
Back to South Carolina for one last question in that game, because I see you have brought him up, and he is a thorn in my side and probably a lot of Tennessee's fans' side. And he may not play tonight, but Miles Studi, if he plays, yes or no, he doesn't get double figures.
Shouldn't. I mean, last time out, I think he went 4 for 5 from three. That, you know, that's unlikely to happen again.
Let's hope.
Stats by Will. The best in the game, like I said, he'll make you smarter just in time for championship season. Tennessee is nearing the climax of the greatest season in school history. What do they need to do for that to be a true statement, Will? Elite Eight, Final Four, one seed? What do they have to do to be the best team in Tennessee basketball history?
Well, a combo of a couple of things. I think one seed is a big piece just because you've never done that before. And if you get a one seed, you know, statistically, you need to make the Final Four, I think. Yeah, Elite Eight would at least make it a good debate between that and, you know, I assume some other team. But even so, one seed in Elite Eight, you've automatically done more than any other team in school history. So I think that would do it. But when you come this far, what is the Kardashian quote? You haven't come this far to come this far. You're a one seed, you need to make the Final Four.
That's a Kardashian quote?
Supposedly.
I think that's a good quote. I like that quote when people say it. I feel like it feels deep, and I didn't realize it was a Kardashian quote. I may have to look at these women differently now.
That's right up there with that Andy Samberg film, the pop star film, Never Stop, Never Stopping.
It's true. I mean, that's kind of deep, too. Just never stop not quitting. You just never quit is essentially the message there.
It is a Kim Kardashian quote.
I got to give her credit. I like that one. You didn't just come this far to come this far, and that's how the team is right now. You didn't just get here to the doorstep of winning a championship just to get to the doorstep. Now you got to kick the door down and go win some titles. Will, the biggest key to tonight's game that we watch, give us a stat to look for. Is it just back to the well of 55 points for everyone not named Dalton Connect, or you got something different for me?
I got something different this time out. We know South Carolina wants this game to be played at a, you know, snail's pace, very slow, nothing in transition. Four of Carolina's five losses this year, opponent has scored 10-plus points on the fast break. 6-4 in those games, 18-1 in everything else. Tennessee's got to score in transition tonight.
So they've had 19 games where opponents haven't scored at least 10 points in fast break. That seems really, really rare.
Yeah, they're great at limiting the pace of games.
Yeah. All right, Stats by Will, give him a follow on X. Subscribe to the Substack. Again, $18 for all of 2024. Talk to you next week.
Thank you,
Will.
Thanks
for having me on.
Appreciate you as always, Will. Sam, you rolling the dice, you locking it in. Final Four and lose in the semifinals, or you're rolling the dice and just letting the chips, or I guess die, fall where they may?
Roll the dice.
Bob?
I said rolling.
As a fan of two teams that have never made the Final Four, the two teams you support, Purdue and Tennessee, neither have made the Final Four. And you're gonna snarl your nose up at the idea of breaking through and finally getting there?
No, I'm not. I'm sorry. Maybe I didn't state it properly. No, I think I think they can.
Oh, no, no, I'm saying you're not going to lock it in, is what I'm saying. Like, you're going to say that's not good enough for you. You're saying, I'm dying of thirst here in my college basketball fandom. You're offering me water. But you're like, I'd really like a Gatorade. I'd really like a Gatorade. I'm going to turn down this water that's guaranteed. I'm going to walk, hopefully, on this path and find a pool to swim in and some Gatorade and some grapes.
No, when you put it that way, yeah, I'd take it.
Yeah.
Come on, Bob.
No. Well, I think it's interesting because, Sam, you and I are both younger. We're kind of in the middle here, right, in terms of our ages. Like, you're not jaded as far. Like, you haven't had as much of tournament failure. Now, I understand that you've had your fair share. I'm not downplaying your experience as a fan.
Sure.
But, like, you don't really, I would imagine, remember, like, 06, 08,
yeah, no.
11.
Yeah.
Like, you don't remember that, distinctly. I do. Bob takes that, and you can add some more years of that and some more seasons of failures and you know, again, combining it with two of his teams, he's seen it and lived and died with it. Like, a Final Four is a huge accomplishment. It's something that's evaded Tennessee. So I do think him having the perspective of, like, hey, to lock that in, I want to get to one in my basketball lifetime, I think that's...
Well, between the two teams I follow, I've had one.
Okay.
But that was, like, when I was little.
Okay, fair enough. Sorry.
That was Purdue in the Final Four. But, yes, but it's been almost a lifetime since that happened.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I keep thinking Purdue's never made it, but it's just this regime and
exactly.
It's been a long time.
So. Yeah, it's been a long time, 40 years. So, so when you put it that way, I'd say, yeah, I would take it and then be fine with whatever happens after that.
That's just me as a crazy sports fan. I just like either double the pain or double the pleasure, you know?
Well, I'm with you. I'm not locking that in either, but when I tell you that you're in the desert and needing some water and you're passing it to, maybe there's a pool over here and some Gatorade and grapes.
I'm hoping for my oasis. For
yeah,
sure.
It does kind of put in a different perspective. But, you know, that water's only going to be so good. You know what I mean?
Take it a step further, though. If Tennessee, and I think back to this, it was 2010. So Tennessee gets to the Elite Eight and loses a heartbreaker. Tight game, plays well, just doesn't, is on the wrong end of it. Does that mean the season's a total disappointment?
Well, no, I can't say total disappointment because I'm on record of saying I appreciate the regular season. I think getting the one seed's an accomplishment if Tennessee's able to close that deal. And, you know, if Tennessee's able to win an outright SEC championship, I cannot call the season a total disappointment. Now, you know, that changes if Tennessee loses these next two games and doesn't win the SEC championship and doesn't get a one seed. But let's just assume Tennessee takes care of business tonight, which is going to put them in the driver's seat for the one seed. If you tell me Tennessee goes into that tournament as a one seed and gets knocked out in the Elite Eight, yeah, it's a disappointment. But it's still a great season.
Yeah.
But it's a disappointing ending.
I would agree with you. I just think there will be others that will, you know, have a sky is falling approach. And I just think it all depends. You know, again, there's a lot of other variables, and we're definitely talking about a lot of what ifs, but in this day and age, the way this tournament is, Elite Eight's pretty damn good too.
It is, but I got to be honest, the math to me drastically changes if Tennessee has a one seed next to their name.
Yeah.
Because the first round game, you know, apologies to Purdue, but it feels like a bye. Or at least it should feel like a bye. That's the point of the 1-16 matchup. It's supposed to feel like a bye. Second round's going to be at least somewhat tricky, but that's a team that you should be able to beat as well. And then you boil it down, you get to the next week, and yeah, then you're just looking at winning two games against teams that you are better than. They might be good, they might be scrappy, but it's like you're going on the road. These are teams that you should be better than. And like losing either one of those would just be such a gut punch. And then, like Will said, you know, you get to the Final Four, and who knows who your matchup is there. Could be a juggernaut. Could be Purdue. It could be Connecticut. It could be Houston. And I think if you lose in the Final Four to a fellow one seed, that's easier to swallow. It's still going to be tough.
Right.
Still going to be a painful loss. But what if you get there and you get, like, a 7 seed? What if you get there and you got a miraculous, like, 10 seed that's made a run? Then that changes the math. Then you get to the national championship, you got San Diego State, a 4 seed waiting on you. You're like, oh, well, you know, we should win this game too. But yeah, losing the Elite Eight would be a bitter end. But no, I don't think anything short of losing as a 16 seed, losing to a 16 seed, could taint the season for me. could disappoint me. But I'm still going to look back on this team. Assuming they take care of business tonight, I look back on this team fondly. We still look back on the 2019 team and the 18 team pretty fondly. Despite what I told you, we only beat two ranked teams in 19. You lost in the Sweet 16 in a game you were favored in. I don't know how much there was to actually hang your hat on in that season when you look back on it, but we still appreciate the team being so good and the feelings they gave us. So, yeah, it would take an absolute disaster. It would take losing these next two games and then bowing out early in the tournament for me to turn on this team and turn on Rick Barnes at this point. They've laid the groundwork, man. They've put in the work. They've been likable. And they're close to the finish line. And I hope they can get there.
Listener wrote in. Boy, would this be sweet. Don't forget that it'll be Triple J's final game in his home state today. Maybe he has a chip on his shoulder and comes out on fire. That would be nice.
He's had a couple good games in the state of South Carolina.
Yeah.
He's played pretty well against them. All right, Sam, take us to break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. I'm wondering if your love's still strong. Ooh, baby. Put the poll question on X about rolling the dice or locking it in. As we look forward to this March run. Although baseball had a pretty fun game last night, too. Got off to a rough start in the top of the first inning. But then Tennessee's offense. Like, this offense is on a pace to be better than the 2021 offense, right? Like, I feel like they have to be so far, at least early in the season. Now, you know, you still got to get to SEC play, and you still got to do it there, but the explosion in the lineup they've had so far feels dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 1 through 8. Still don't know how I feel about, you know, the 9 spot when Inslee's in there. I don't know if I mean, he's not a terrible hitter by any means, but he's not like the home run pop that's going to scare you like the rest of the lineup. But 1 through 8, everyone can rake and everyone's got power. And they flex that muscle last night, led by freshman shortstop Dean Curley, who had 3 home runs and a grand slam, a 3-run bomb, and a 2-run bomb.
Was about 2 feet away from hitting for the home run cycle, too. Almost hit another solo shot.
If only he had done that, you could say he had a good game.
Yeah.
That's what I've always like hated.
Try again.
That's what I've always hated in baseball, is like the cycle. Like, I'd rather have, you know, just a bunch of doubles than that single. Like, give me a triple. Give me 2 home runs over a cycle. But either way, Dean Curley was an absolute monster last night. Christian Moore, Billy Amick, both with just monster shots. And Kansas State tried. Like, they threw a weekend guy. It wasn't some midweek opponent that you could just flex your muscle on just because of who they are and the lack of talent they have. This was Kansas State trying, and Tennessee still did the same thing to him.
Yeah, it was a dominant performance on offense yesterday from Tennessee. And, yeah, I mean, I think you're starting to see, like you said, John, that lineup 1 through 9, 1 through 8, whatever you want to do. You know, I am a little, you know, I mean, I don't think Inslee's going to be the biggest bat in that lineup for you, but a guy that you can just throw in the bottom there with some speed and the ability to grind out some long at-bats, I think, is great. But, yeah, I mean, I think you're starting to see this lineup takes shape, and a lot of these guys are really starting to click. You know, I kind of mentioned it yesterday, but it's good to see Cannon Peebles, you know, starting to get comfortable, I think, and really settle down and settle into his role. You see him get, you know, go 2 for 2, really. And sorry, I thought he went 2 for 3 there. But yeah, you're really starting to see guys take off. I think Dylan Dreiling had a great game. He's really hitting it to all sides of the field.
Yeah, that was a monster shot he had, too.
Yeah, that was a hell of a shot from him.
All those home runs,
no doubters.
Felt like they would be gone anywhere, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, when the conversation starts later in the season about Tennessee and their Cracker Jack ballpark, like, all those home runs were gone anywhere.
Wouldn't matter.
Even in Omaha, all those were gone.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to see that this lineup is one of the most dangerous, if not the most dangerous in the country, top to bottom. And you just got to get that pitching staff piece together and everything like that, and I think you'll you'll feel great about this team heading into SEC play. But yeah, really exciting stuff and a great performance yesterday.
I didn't see the early innings, and I know he gave up the first two runs in the first inning, but how did Combs look? I saw he struck out four in two innings.
Yeah, you know, it looked a little shaky at the start there. I think they were going a little bit more kind of towards that opener role. He only got two innings and kind of got taken out of there. He got settled in kind of that second inning, but I think they were planning on kind of doing that opener thing with Aaron Combs, and then you got Snead in there for four innings, and then Banky kind of to finish it off, and Dylan Loy in there in the last inning. But yeah, I mean, I think it'll be interesting seeing this kind of opener role take shape a little bit for Tennessee and having a versatile arm like Snead being able to throw 4 to 6 innings.
Yeah, so of the guys who pitched yesterday, who do we think is going to be a factor in SEC play? All of them?
Yeah, no, I think you'll definitely see all those guys pitch in SEC play and have some pretty important –
okay,
important
so like in leverage situations.
Sure. I think Snead is probably the biggest name out of those three, but I will definitely, you know, I would not be shocked to see Aaron Combs and Banky come into some high leverage situations as well.
Okay. Bob, you said you didn't get to watch the early innings. What time did you get in? Did you get in time for the offensive explosion?
Saw some of the curly shots. As much as I could endure it with whoever was announcing the game, but I digress. Yeah, I mean, my question too, and I don't follow it like you guys do, but so I saw Antigua in there too. Did he play it all in the weekend series?
No, that was his season debut yesterday.
That was the first time out?
Yeah, he got in just real late in the game, I think maybe the last inning of the game. So that'll be definitely something to look out for. You know, that's a kid who, like Dean Curley, was kind of in that competition there for shortstop, and that injury kind of stopped him. Obviously, Dean Curley's got a huge leg up on that role now. But yeah, Antigua is a guy that they're also very excited about.
I was going to say, it's like, how do you keep – I mean, how many home runs is that for Curley this season? Is it four or five?
I think it's got to be five or six maybe
because
by this point. Yeah.
This is a complaint of mine on UTSports.com. What drives me nuts is when you look at the box scores – they reset the home runs after each game. You never really know what the running tally is until you have to go deeper into the stats. So, but yeah, I mean, if he's hitting the way he is, and it looks like he played both short and third when Antigua came in, is what I'm guessing. But
I didn't have that ninth inning on, to be honest with you. That was only when Antigua came in. So.
I just wonder how you know. And again, SEC will be a different level of competition, but I don't know. I don't know how you keep Curley out the way he's playing right now.
He's got six home runs.
Yep, I see that. I just looked it up myself, too.
With some hard-hit doubles in there, too, I'm pretty sure. Like, the offensive explosion got me pretty excited for SEC baseball season.
Yeah.
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 Like, knowing that this offense can go out and do a lot of the same things that Tennessee did in 21. You know, we'll see if the pitching is good enough to be that elite. The pitching is good enough to obviously make the postseason. I feel good that Tennessee is going to be hosting a regional this year. As of now, I feel pretty good Tennessee is going to be hosting a super regional and competing for Omaha. That's the expectations that Vitello has set, and it looks like this team is just as talented as ever before. I mean, honestly. Maybe you don't have the first-round arms, but overall, from a team perspective, this team seems like it has as much, if not more, talent than any team Vitello's had.
Mm-hmm. Just a great balance, too. You know, I think you just kind of look in this lineup and, you know, it's not like you're seeing three or four righties in a row and three or four lefties in a row or something like that. Like, I think you're seeing a really great balance of guys. You've got switch hitter and Peebles. There's really just no breathing room for opposing pitchers in this lineup at all, and that's just going to be able to – it's going to be a factor as the season goes on, obviously, and it already is becoming one.
Tony Vitello has a beautiful mind and sees the permutations and sees the batting averages and the splits against righties and lefties, and he has pieced this lineup together with pieces of players from all over the country, and he has taken them and put them together to create something bigger than all the individual parts. A beautiful mind, Tony Vitello. I felt like the opposite of John Nash mathematician genius. When I was trying to log into my ESPN Plus last night, I sent you the screenshot. It happened again. I go to log on, not authorized. So then I said, you know what? I'm bypassing Spectrum. I got a YouTube TV account I can sign into and link up that works on my phone. So then I tried to log in just to my YouTube TV thinking maybe that works. Then I get, okay, go on your phone, go on your device, type this in, authenticate your YouTube TV. So then I did that, Sam, and guess what it said? Okay, we need to verify that this is really you, because who the hell is trying to steal your YouTube TV account? I mean, seriously, to watch Tennessee baseball. It'd be different if I was trying to steal it to watch the NBA Finals or an ESPN Monday Night Football game. That I might buy. This, I'm trying to watch a non-SEC baseball game. I'm trying to watch Tennessee versus Kansas State. But go ahead, YouTube. Go ahead, Gmail. Never got the email. I'm like, can we try it another way? Can I please do this two-factor authentication that is obviously so important? It said, yeah, open up your Gmail app and accept and hit accept. Well, guess what? My Gmail account is set up through my iPhone to go just to my mail, not to the Gmail app, so it never came through. Then I open it up after I've hit, like, try different ways seven times, and there was something on there that said allow or deny. I hit allow. Nothing happened. I hit send again, log in, log out, try again, nothing, ever. So then I eventually just put my Spectrum back in and it worked. I don't know what the hell happened, but it took about 10 minutes. And boy, let me tell you, Bob, I thought it was just the heat that used to do this to me on the farm, but when things weren't going well on the farm, I used to get so mad and so flustered. I was like, it's outside, I'm in the heat, I'm dealing with animals, there's nothing I can do. It's not a temper problem, this is just your surroundings, it's your environment. Not the case, because last night in my climate-controlled living room, I'm sitting there just punching my leg, just screaming curse words. Please work! For the love of God, just let me watch this baseball game! Why aren't you working? It's not the heat. It's not the cows. Turns out I just have a temper problem. Things don't go well. I was so mad.
Well, we've talked about ESPN+. It does that to people. And it shouldn't be that hard, but it is for everyone. It happened to me last night as well when I was trying to watch the game. I guess I'm more used to it at this point. It's tough to get pissed. It's just like, God, come on, man. At some points, I just give up. I didn't last night. I ended up getting to the game, but sometimes I just give up on it, period. I was one
move away. If I logged back in and it didn't work again, I was giving up.
Yeah.
I was giving up, but it's like someone knew. Mickey Mouse knew I was close to my breaking point and decided to throw me a bone.
Hey, a little breaking news before we go to a break.
This is
local high school stuff, but this guy is kind of a legend. Farragut football coach Eddie Courtney has announced he is retiring. Been the head coach for the Admirals since 1996. More than 200 wins, 5A state title in 2016. For those fans of the station who were... have either gone to Farragut, live out in Farragut, you know who Eddie Courtney is. He's a bit of a legend. So time marches on. Be interesting to see who they plug in as the head coach out there.
It's a circle of life, because I saw that Catholic announced their basketball coach, Juwan Smith.
Yes.
My boy, McMinn County Cherokee, my stomping grounds. They removed the interim tag. I didn't realize he was the interim coach there. They removed the interim tag and made him the full-time basketball head coach.
Yeah, I saw him when I went to the Webb Catholic game a few weeks back, and I didn't even know he was on the staff. That's how out of touch I was on that. But he was running the show at that point. They had a different coach, and he didn't work out. I'll leave it at that. He didn't even make it through the first season. So Jawan's got the gig.
Overrated, underrated, Grant Williams at 920. Stay locked in on Fan Run Radio. Back on the morning show, pleased to be joined by Grant Williams, SEC legend, Tennessee Volunteer legend, and now in year five of his NBA career in Charlotte. Grant, top of the morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Top of the morning. How you doing?
Doing good. What's it been like going back home to play for the hometown Charlotte team?
It's been a blessing, man, just being able to be here home. Be around family, be around friends, you know, play for a city that, you know, you grew up in and love, and you want to, you know, build something great here.
Grant, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Let's dovetail off that a little bit. So in this past year, you've played for a title contender. Then you move to a mid-level playoff team in Dallas, now a team that's in a rebuild. And I know it's still ball wherever you play, but that wide range of teams and what you're playing for might feel a little different to some, and certainly, you know, what you were accustomed to in Boston. But have you been able to bring things to that team? Because I got to believe the Hornets look to you as a leader, too, with that team. You know, things that you've learned to develop from your previous gigs. And I'm thinking not just basketball, but culturally, you know, locker room culture, et cetera, that can prove to benefit that rebuild going on in Charlotte.
Yeah, I think that's the goal. I think we're not as far off as people may think. There's talent here in Charlotte, actually every place that I was in. Boston was considered a favorite. Dallas, I think, is talented enough to go all the way and compete at the highest level. They have Luka and Kyrie, and those two are just gifted and incredible, and they can carry a team all the way to the championship if they really want to. And then in Charlotte, they're young, but there's talent. Like LaMelo Ball is really, really good. Brandon Miller is going to be really good in the future, next 15 years of his career. And then when Mark Williams and everybody else gets healthy, has a lot of talent, and just got to figure out what winning looks like and how do you win every single night.
No, I think you're exactly right about the talent in Charlotte. It is a little slept on. I think the league in general just has an embarrassment of riches when it comes to offensive talent in the league. So much so that the NBA has started talking about maybe making some rule changes to give defenses a fighting chance. You're the VP of the NBA Players Association. What realistic changes do you think make the most sense moving forward for the NBA to give defenses a chance?
That's a real question. The competition committee has been trying to handle that. I'm not serving on that currently. But in regards to rules, it's just a matter of what the league wants to have it look like, you know, whether it's more physicality on the perimeter or whether they do the same in the paint, you know, in more close quarter areas. You know, it's just depending on kind of what style of basketball the league wants to establish and bring back. We have a lot of guys that are going to be able to play outside in, but also, you know, as the league continues to get younger, but also more athletic and more sizable, you know, who knows what the league will continue want the basketball to look like, you know. So there's, you know, you see it kind of right now at the end of the season where the physicality kind of heightens. I don't know how they'll if they'll keep that as you see it start of next season. Just because 82 games at the same physicality may impact people's bodies and load a little bit more. But I'm curious, you know, about what potential rules they could change to add or bring back or even just, you know, maybe talk about for a defensive side of the basketball.
Moving on to a little college and a program you're certainly familiar with and a coach you're certainly familiar with. And I think about it when we talk about this kind of this emphasis on defense versus offense. And what we've been watching here in Knoxville is, from our perspective, a bit of an evolution with Coach Barnes. Feels like there's more emphasis on that offensive side of the ball. Having a Dalton Connect on board helps that new mindset, I'm sure. But you know this, coach never loses sight of the fact that great defense still travels. You can ask Alabama about that from this past weekend. From your perspective, having played for him, do you see anything different? Is it just us believing that, or do you see something different with how he's coaching versus the seasons you were there?
Yeah, he's done a good job of adjusting to the talent that he has. You know, originally he was trying to find the next me. And currently they have guys that, you know, are just phenomenal what they do. Like Dalton is an elite scorer, both from the perimeter, but can also play in the mid-range. And then they have a bunch of guard play. You know, right now this guy is one of the best, better point guards in the nation. Santiago has a great veteran leadership. And then Josiah allows the switchability of the team. And then Jonas and all the other bigs are playing with physicality and able to protect the basket. So they still have that defensive identity. They also have a different style of offense on the other end, allowing Dalton to play to his strengths.
Yeah, when he talks about his evolution, he's been a little bit more willing to play guys in foul trouble. I want an honest answer here, Grant. Do you ever ask Rick Barnes if he regrets having you on the bench to start overtime against Purdue?
I never asked him that, man. It's one of those where you got to trust the coach in every scenario. Back in when I was playing, he definitely trusted me with two fouls, you know. That's similar to how he trusted Dalton in that Auburn game to play that first half. It allowed them to keep staying and, you know, not get your third. But I haven't talked to him about that Purdue game coming off at overtime. You know, maybe it could have changed. Maybe it could have been different. But, you know, we wouldn't be in that position if we didn't, you know, foul at the end. So
I got to be honest, Grant, it still breaks my heart 5 years later. Can you talk about the difference in just postseason basketball as we are here on the cusp of March and Tennessee's chasing championships starting tonight in Columbia, trying to win a regular season SEC title, and then, of course, when you get to the big dance?
Yeah, this starts tonight, you know, with the level of physicality and commitment, because this game tonight can win you a championship. So this has got to show the team's mentality. It's got to show, you know, what they're trying to accomplish at the end of this season, both not just for the regular season title, but what they can lead into the tournament and also the NCAA tournament. And it's going to bring them together and allow them to understand the importance of, you know, the winning games like these, you know. And that's something that I feel like I have more regrets about. Like, we lost to Auburn that last year at Auburn when we were winning most of the game. And Bruce did a good job of taking me out of it, and they ended up winning that game. We could have had a share, you know, or even the SEC tournament championships. I think that's where, you know, it changes the whole, you know, story of your season if you can get that win and then continue to use that to propel you forward.
How aware are you in the locker room at a place like Tennessee about the history of the program? And in Tennessee's case, the fact that a team has never broken through and made a Final Four, is that something the guys are aware of and talk about and kind of strive for? Or is it just like a coach keeps you locked on one game at a time, control what you can control?
You got to focus on one game at a time, because in college basketball, you can lose any game. So you have to focus on how do you do all the little things to impact winning. And really that is the focus, because you can't look ahead. You can't look and try and say, like, oh, like, this is what we got to do. This is because no one's ever done it. So you got to actually commit to, you know, focusing on the little things. So that way you can get to that point and do it together.
We're talking with Grant Williams, VFL Grant Williams. Hey, wanted to get your take on this. We talked for a second about Dalton Connect. You've had the privilege of playing against some of the best players in the world, the best players in the world, really. And you see a variety of NBA stars firsthand on the regular. We know you're not necessarily a draft Nick, but, you know, there's a lot of talk about where Dalton's going to end up as, you know, a first-round pick, et cetera. From your perspective, and based on all the players you've seen, how do you feel someone like Dalton could stack up with those regulars in the league, given that, you know, it takes a little bit of time sometimes, but do you feel that stock's overblown on him, or is it just right, just based on what you're seeing?
Yeah, I think that he's got potential to be a lottery pick, a guy that is not just a lottery, but even top 10 in this class, maybe even top 8. You know, it's one of those where he has the talent and the ability on the offensive side of the basketball, and he tries on defense. Like, that's one of those where you don't have to be an elite defender, but you got to be someone that is willing to battle and compete, and he has that edge. So now it's just a matter of putting those two together. And offensively, he's gifted. You know, his size, his ability to elevate him a shot, to not get where he wants, but also knock down at a high clip. You know, the shots that he takes in college, you know, are you don't see typically. Like, I remember watching that Auburn game live, and I was like, he's shooting this NBA range with confidence and off the dribble, off screens, and that's something that offense can always help you in this league. And especially if you're a guy that doesn't necessarily need the ball in his hands to have the offense. You know, he's a guy that can space and spot, but he's also a guy you can, you know, come off pick down or screen actions, be able to knock down shots, or even play, make the right read and get the ball. He's an unselfish player, too. That's something you start to teach, you know. He was getting double teamed, and rather than trying to force his way through it or keep the ball in his hands, he trusted his teammates, getting Jonas in the pocket or kicking out to Santi for second drives and threes. You know, he has a really great feel for the game.
As fans and media, you know, we try to make comparisons. We've been trying to find a player that Dalton Connect reminds us of. Do you have a submission when you watch him and you see him and say, oh, that looks like so-and-so's game right there? Or when you're so close to, you know, still playing right now, obviously, and being young in your career, that everyone kind of is their own standalone player?
I think he's kind of his own standalone player right now. I can't really think of a comparison over the years. just because he's of his size, like he's really 6'8", 6'9". Like his ability and like knockdown shots, like Doug McDermott wasn't as athletic as he was, you know, especially going downhill towards the rim. And he's more of a swing, you know, big or kind of like 3-4 that can shoot, but also come off screens and really go downhill. He has to get back to the basket game. So it's really hard to think about a guy that, you know, reminds. If you have any ideas, it'd be better if I could, you know, give you an example. But
I like Doug McDermott. That's the one I kind of have been circling, and you kind of mentioned him. I think Doug's got a little bit of underrated hops. I think Doug's sneaky athletic, but Dalton does seem to have a little bit more bounce.
Doug was favored his right hand. Dalton plays a little bit more out of his left and going downhill and has a little more size and creation game. Doug was great because of his size and his ability to shoot. But, you know, they're both kind of different because Doug, like in college, you know, he was a little heavier. He was a little, you know, more of a four. Dawson's a little bit more of a wing. And it's like you have to think of somebody that's able to go downhill. Like, I don't know. I don't remember Doug ever doing that move like he did against Johnny Broome at Auburn. Yeah. I didn't see him doing stuff like that.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of Johnny Broome and Auburn, loved seeing you at the game last week. And we all noticed you were sitting with Coach Heupel. So is that – have you guys met before or spent any time together? And my other question would be, how was he in terms of his hoops knowledge?
He's actually really, really good. You know, him and his son, you can tell they love basketball. I've never really sat and spent a lot of time with him because every time I come, he's typically during season when he's coaching. And that's normally the times I'm able to come to the campus and he's focused on, you know, I'll come to the Florida game. I've come to games. So I haven't necessarily had time to sit down and talk to him. And I actually had a really great time. You know, he's a phenomenal human being, phenomenal coach, and was able to talk about not only basketball, but the football team, and really excited for his direction. You know, I always heard great things about him from Taco Fall, because he came from UCF, him and Danny White. And Don Taco said he stole two of our best people. And he was true and honest about that, because every conversation I have with Danny, every conversation I've had with Coach Heupel, you know, it's shown true. And we have a lot of great coaching talent currently at the university. It's crazy because I remember talking to Bobby Mays when I was being recruited, when I was a freshman. He said Tennessee goes in waves. There's times where the basketball team is great, there's times where the baseball team is great, or football team is great. But the best time to be at the University of Tennessee is when all three are popping together. That's what we have right now. It's similar to that of like when it was 08, 07, when women's basketball, football, all those were good. Phil Fulmer and you know, Pearl and all those guys. The same way right now where basketball is really heightened, top five team in the country, football has potential to be. And in baseball, you know, there may not be top 5, 10 this year, but they have potential to be that talent of a team over the next 3 years.
All right, Grant, we'll get you out of here with some word association. I'm going to fire some topics at you. You give me the first thing that comes to mind. You ready?
Yep.
Knoxville.
Tennessee.
Rick Barnes.
A legend.
March Madness.
The best.
Draymond Green.
Competitor.
Rick Rubin's all-white party.
Michael.
Sister Jean.
Oh, heartbreak.
Tennessee basketball GOAT.
Bernard King.
Settlers of Catan.
Oh, moment in history.
Grant Williams, appreciate the time. I've really enjoyed watching you and Charlotte actually get to touch the basketball. That's a little bit different than what you were getting in Dallas. I've enjoyed watching you get to shoot and play some basketball again. Best of luck the rest of the season. And I'm glad you're going to be locked in on this ride with Tennessee down the stretch.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for waking up with us.
All right, talk soon.
Sam, send us to break. It's the morning show here on Fan Run Radio.